Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this episode is a Top Cow Chronology episode. Manny and I are going to very briefly talk about Witchblade 7 and 8. Again, for those not familiar, the Top Cow Chronology is basically a reading order that I discovered on the Comic Vine website from a user that goes by the name of Condor. Manny and I both had never read any of the Top Cow artifact books, any of that part of the Top Cow universe, but had always wanted to. So we came across this chronology. We decided it would be a great way to read all the books that tie into the artifact corner of the Top Cow universe. The first books in the chronology are set back in ancient times, but Manny and I decided, since we weren't familiar at all, to actually read the books that were first published just to get our feet wet, even though they weren't at the beginning of the chronology. So we actually read Witchblade 1 through 8, which is the first trade paperback. And then we went back and started with the actual chronology. And now we're at the point in the chronology where we should be reading Witchblade 1 through 8. And rather than read them again and go super in-depth, we've just kind of flipped through them and kind of refreshed our memory. So we're putting them in here just for the sake of being complete. But if you want more in-depth analysis, you can go back and listen to those episodes. They're still available on the Comic Source website. Of course, realize those were the first podcast that we ever did, so I haven't listened to them since we recorded them, basically. I wonder how they hold up. I know the sound quality is not as good because our equipment wasn't as great back then, but anyway, on to the books we're going to talk about. I'm going to give the creative team for both books because it's the exact same creative team. So we have David Wall and Christina Z with an assist from Michael Turner on the writing chores. Pencils are by Michael Turner, inks are by D-Tron, and colors are by Jonathan D. Smith. So, issue 7, if you remember, if you listened to the last Top Cow Chronology Project, it ended with Nottingham attacking Sarah Pizzini in Central Park. And also, we saw that Sarah's neighbor meets Sarah's sister. Sarah's sister like breaks into her apartment. Sarah's neighbor, the one that's the daughter of the friend that got killed that kind of started it all off, she's looking to be a model, even though she's really young. Her name is Lisa. And Sarah's sister, Julie, along with Lisa, who has just been recruited by this fancy schmancy modeling agency, go to this party at this mansion. And when Manny and I read this the first time, we were just kind of weirded out by it a little bit. There's like S&M going on inside, and just seems weird to take a teenage kid into that, even if she is looking to be a model. It just, I don't know. It just seemed weird. It seemed no less weird this time. Maybe it ties into the other plot line that we've seen throughout the first six issues with the serial killer that's going around killing beautiful women. But yeah, I found it no less weird this time, Manny. What did you think?
Actually, I think you heard me as I was like kind of just glancing through the issue again. I was like, oh, this issue.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah,
exactly.
Feels weird.
Yeah, just super weird. Anyway, then the scene shifts to Nottingham and Sarah. They're in Central Park. It's awkward. They're just both kind of standing there. Nottingham seems like he wants to open up to Sarah based on the dream that he had. But, you know, he was just trying to kill her at the Liberty Island just a few days before. So she talks about maybe the fact that he's playing mind games. She's just not really sure what's going on. So, Sarah basically, after Nottingham starts talking about this and won't let her get a word in edgewise, like he had this dream and he has had some need to talk to her based on this dream, and seemed strange. And she kind of turns her back on him and then says, what about the Rialto? What about the contest that was going on? What do you know about that? What about me being on the yacht? And she turns around and he's gone. He's disappeared. So not really sure. It's never like fully explained. So again, maybe it's something that'll be more fleshed out. Maybe he just felt a connection to her from having the Witchblade brand being put on the back of his hand and being close to her at Liberty Island, had some kind of connection, felt the need to see her. Just not really sure. Then the scene shifts to Jake, one of the policemen in Sarah's precinct, who met a reporter at the scene of one of the serial killer murders. And she seems to know a lot about Nottingham and Irons, and is filling Jake in like, hey, you know, your fellow police officer could be in some trouble because Ken Irons isn't what he appears to be. And this Nottingham guy, like, you know, what's really going on? So I will say that the page with the two of them talking, it gives a lot of information, but it's like a wall of text. It's a lot of word balloons. Next, we see Sarah go back to her apartment. There's actually an eviction notice. She's 10 days late on her rent, just based on having the Witchblade and her life being turned completely upside down, I suppose. Then the scene shifts back to Jake. He's trying to track Sarah down and warn her about Ken Irons and the fact that he's not what he appears to be, this, you know, rich philanthropist guy who's got the best interest of the world at heart. Meanwhile, at the Riverdale compound, home of the Church of Holy Prosperity. So think like those prosperity churches, but this was back in the mid-90s. The prosperity churches are more of a 2000s kind of thing. But anyway, it's this church that's like a giant mansion and they're having a fundraiser and there's various celebrities there. And Sarah is Ken Irons' date and she's wearing this, you know, beautiful dress, and like Michael Madsen is there, which again, weird to see in a comic, just all of a sudden Michael Madsen's there. And so Jake tracks Sarah down there. He's got a lot of the photographs that the reporter had given to him as evidence. And he shows up there. Sarah's not really happy to see him. Like, what are you doing? Why are you here? And he's like, I need to show you these pictures. This Ken Irons guy is not the man you think he is. He's a murderer, a crime lord. And Sarah's like, I don't want to look at your pictures, and knocks him out of his hand. And she's really upset. And unbeknownst to Jake, he's played right into Irons' hands. Irons goes, picks up the photos, looks at them, says, maybe we should leave. And so him and Sarah leave. They're driving in his Rolls Royce back to his apartment. And Sarah's trying to apologize for Jake, and Irons is just like not having it. He's basically giving her the cold shoulder. And then he, at one point, he says, I said, end of discussion, I'm done. And what Sarah doesn't realize is she's being completely manipulated. Then we see Jake at the precinct. He's really upset that Sarah wouldn't listen to him. And we see that the internal affairs guy, can't remember what his name is off the top of my head, but he is not a Selzer. That's it. Actually, trying to comfort Jake, which is totally out of character with him. He's like, having girl troubles? Don't worry. Maybe Irons won't be able to get it up. I mean, the guy's just such a sleazebag like the entire time. They should have called him Sleazer instead of Selzer. Anyway, we see Sarah and Ken Irons back at his condominium, and Irons just goes off on Sarah. Did you once remember who I am to the community and the public eye, and you have your boyfriend show up and blah, blah, blah? And as I said, he's just doing this to manipulate Sarah. He knows that she possesses the Witchblade, and he's basically trying to tear her down. And we see that Sarah's having a hard time controlling her emotions and thus controlling the Witchblade. And we see little tendrils of it start to snake out from her forearm and her wrist through the dress. And as Irons turns his back to her, he's actually smiling. And then we see Nottingham standing there with a couple of swords. And the issue ends. So with issue 8, it picks up with Jake realizing that Selzer actually works for Irons. And he's got Selzer at gunpoint and says, take me to them. You know what happened at the Rialto. You know where they are. I want to know what's going on. So next we see Nottingham and Irons and Sarah you know, back in his penthouse apartment, and we see the Witchblade starting to manifest itself more and more. There's a storm raging outside. The lightning's kind of being called down by the power of the Witchblade. And Irons tells Nottingham to begin the ceremony. And Sarah's trying to break through to Nottingham, be like, hey, remember the dream? I know you care about me. And Nottingham raises his sword and he goes to stab down at Sarah, and he actually just stabs between her legs and doesn't hit her, grabs her wrist, and Irons thinks everything's still on the up and up. And then all of a sudden, Nottingham turns on him, just backhands him, and then leaps, stabs him several times, you know, rips his tuxedo to shreds that he had worn to the party, and reaches both of his katanas up and is about to stab Nottingham when Nottingham reaches up and grabs both blades with one hand. He says, I can't believe you've betrayed me. You tried this before and failed, didn't you? And then Irons proceeds to beat the living daylights out of Nottingham. I'm just beats him down. So this is really showing the strength of Irons, you know, beyond having any power of the Witchblade, which is what he's been after all along. So he basically beats Nottingham unconscious and throws him out the window of the penthouse to fall to his death. And so Sarah's like, man, if you really want the Witchblade, if that's what it's all about, you ran the tournament, you known all about me, you trailed me the whole time. If you want the Witchblade so bad, then take it. And she tries to like pull it off. And Nottingham said, Iron said, I tried that once and it didn't work. And he finally shows that he's missing a hand. And it's not like cleanly chopped off. It's like a brutal, jagged cut. And we see kind of a tattoo on that forearm that ends at the wrist, sort of, that's very similar to the symbols that we see on the Witchblade. And it clearly shows that just like a lot of the people he had trying at the Rialto to wield the Witchblade, it didn't accept him. So actually what he's done is by having that tattoo, much like Nottingham had, and having Sarah actually wear the Witchblade, be the bearer of the Witchblade, he can then steal the power from her. She's actually the one still wearing it, but he's drawing the power and drawing the Witchblade through her to himself. So we see it kind of reform a hand. So his hand's made out of the shell, metallic-like substance of the Witchblade. And he's very excited. He's like, finally, I have power. And just at that moment, Selzer and Jake show up. And Selzer says, boss, look who I have here. And Irons just blasts him with this blast of power. And Irons says, I am God. And Jake responds, not for long. Take cover. And starts shooting at him. Irons just knocks the bullets away like it's nothing. And then he starts to choke Jake with a tendril of the Witchblade. Sarah runs over. I'm not going to let you take another life. Irons just casually blasts her. Not quite out the window, but up toward that area, up toward the corner near the hole actually where Nottingham got tossed out. And Sarah has flashbacks to her previous partner who got killed, Michael Yee. And as she breaks through the window and goes flying off the edge of the balcony, we see the Witchblade start to manifest around her wrist again. And all of a sudden, we see tendrils fire up and grab onto a gargoyle that's at the edge of the balcony. Next, we see a beautiful full double-page spread from Michael Turner with Sarah in the Witchblade armor. The Witchblade's fully manifested itself. And so I find this kind of interesting. This is probably the one thing I didn't notice reading it the first time. It's apparently the Witchblade has enough power within itself to like fully armor and power both these people. Like neither one of them seems like weaker than Sarah normally does. So that's interesting. Is there some kind of limitation on the Witchblade? Like you can only draw so much power and make yourself only so powerful? Right? Because it would seem like if the Witchblade is capable of generating like this much power, like it's this powerful of an artifact, then wouldn't Sarah be able to make herself even more powerful than she is in this book? But again, maybe it's a limitation of the actual human body or the bearer of the Witchblade. So anyway, there's a big epic fight And at the end, I'm very much speeding through this. There's a big epic fight. Sarah wins. Irons wants her to actually kill him. Sarah refuses. She says, no, we won't. We won't. Showing some control over the Witchblade, because the Witchblade wants to kill him as well. But Sarah proves herself and her ability to wield the Witchblade in this scene. But Iron says, well, if you won't kill me, then I'll just do it myself. And he lets go of the ledge of the balcony that he'd been knocked off and supposedly falls to his death. But I have a feeling we have not seen the last of Irons, or Nottingham for that matter. And that's pretty much where the issue ends. Sarah saying, I am light, an angel of life. I am power. I am more than I thought I'd be. And Jake is kind of sitting there rubbing his wounds saying, Sarah? So I'm sure he's awfully surprised to see Sarah in this situation. And it'll be interesting to see how he reacts and how he keeps the secrets as well. So not a whole lot in these two issues that I didn't notice or talk about in the first time. So again, I encourage you to go back and listen to those episodes, other than that one little part I talked about with the Witchblade able to power both people. But I did feel like, and I'm sure I said this back when we read them the first time, I did feel like Witchblade gets a bad rap for being a bad girl comic. You know, just it's all about the cheesecake. It's all about the visuals, and it's not a very strong story. But what I found on this second read-through was that I find it to be constructed better than I realized the first time I read it. The first time I read it, I think I got a little hung up on some of the dialogue. You know, some of the scripting is a little bit 90s. It is a little bit of its time. You know, this came out in July and August of 1996. But that can be kind of forgiven in my mind, I think. And I didn't notice it as much the second time through. What I did notice is how well it's paced and plotted, and what a strong character Sarah is, and how the story really does stand up. I really do feel like you can pick this up and you can read it now and you can enjoy it for what it is. And I don't think there's anything inherently bad girl about it. You know, that term has kind of a negative connotation in the industry. Again, I think it's applied to books that people consider to be just about the visuals, and it's not necessarily a quality book, and that's not the case here. So I'm glad I went back through and read these, and I can't wait to keep continuing with the chronology and get to some new material and start learning more about Sarah's journey. What are your thoughts, Manny?
You see, like, I know you've already done the 1 through 4. One through six, but this is something you and I have talked about when talking about the current run on Witchblade that Top Cow has through Image. It's like, going back and reading these again, it's making me think about the differences and the reasons why I don't like the new series. And I mean, besides the kind of weird panels that are really of their time of the 90s, some of those moments, I mean, it's really, really dramatic. And it's like you said, it's going back and taking a look at them. It's a lot better structured than you might give it credit for. And I just really enjoyed just the way it tells a story in between action scenes and kind of, it's kind of like learning on the job. And I just enjoyed it a little bit more now, especially with after reading the new series, which is bumming me out, to be honest with you. So it's nice to go back and see that kind of the 90s feel. But the other thing I didn't enjoy is what you mentioned on, my God, it's wordy. just classic Witchblade.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point you made about it being wordy, because I did mention that one page is just like a wall of text. What's so interesting about that is what an incredible artist Michael Turner is, and how that's not really needed. I mean, I guess in a way it is, but I bet if if you were to give this, these pages, you know, this artwork to a writer of today and give them the plot, say, here's the plot, and ask them to script it, you know, without having panel by panel breakdown of what needs to be there, I bet it would be a lot less wordy. I bet they would, you know, there's a lot I think that can be cut out. So I think that that aspect of the book being so wordy is definitely of its time. So did you have it kind of seems like you have a greater appreciation for this after having read the reboot, which you're really not digging. Makes this stand up even more in your mind. Like, man.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I like the way the Witchblade represented it, more kind of more like an alloy, kind of almost like. And then I like the way that it's not necessarily, you know, she has real good control of it, but like you said, there's probably more to it that she just hasn't figured out yet. It's action driven, and it's just for me, it's more entertaining, and that's what I'm finding. And then the story is not bad either. Just a lot, you know, a lot of these, some of these artifact books are just of their time. But if you kind of just, you know, look beyond that, there's and then obviously the really, really, some of these panels are really, great to look at. I do have a greater appreciation for it.
Yeah. It's interesting to compare the two for sure. I mean, the new series is written by Caitlin Kittredge, who's a really great writer. Her Lucas Stand miniseries that she did for, is it IDW or no, Boom, that she did with Boom, that's based on a story concept from Kurt Sutter, the creator of Sons of Anarchy. That's a very strong character, and she does an incredible job. That's kind of Lucas Stan is kind of a no-nonsense character, much like Sarah Pazzini is, as opposed to Alex, the new bearer of the Witchblade in the new series. She's, you know, it's much more about kind of feelings, and she's trying to find her way, and it's just a little, you know, things aren't so cut and dry and black and white, at least not to this point. So it's got a very different feel. It's a lot softer. It just feels like more touchy feely, and
it just doesn't feel like Witchblade. It feels like Witchblade needs to be a little bit more edgy. I think that's what's bugging me.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I think that not only, with the structure of the story and the characters, but like you said, the Witchblade here seeming more metallic and having sharp edges, where in that book, from what we've seen so far, it kind of looks like, it kind of reminds me of, and I mentioned this when we talked about it before, the Absolution series from Avatar Press, written by Christos Gage, where it's this kind of blue substance this guy can like form and, you know, send out. Or another good example might be like the Venom costume, right? Like she just has, mm-hmm. It's very loose and liquidy. It doesn't have like the sharp edges and the, so it's not just edgy, but it's also the edgy and metallicness of the Witchblade. So yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if it has to do with like the times that that the stories are being told in, like the eras, you know, like maybe that affects.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you, but it's the reason why I feel like the book needs to be edgy. It's just because of just some of the characters also that she's paired up with later. I mean, we're talking like, because I'm having a hard time seeing this Witchblade going against or being paired up with the darkness, unless you're gonna like do the same thing to the darkness, in which case, holy crap, not good at all. And then, you know, then there's like there's those books with Witchblade Medieval Spawn and so on and so on. And I just don't feel like that's the Witchblade that would be compelling to especially to like pair up with like any type of spawn or just go up against the darkness. It's just, it just doesn't fit for me. You kind of understand where I'm coming from?
No, I agree 100%. And the thing that I'm kind of holding out hope is, like, I have faith in Mark Silvestri and Matt Hawkins, that whatever pitch Caitlin Kittredge gave them, that they believed in it. And so I'm kind of hoping, you know, I actually haven't read the last couple issues, I think, or maybe the last one. You know, I read 1 and 2, but I haven't read past issue 2 yet. So I think 3 is out.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat. I haven't read 3 either.
Maybe 4 is coming out soon, or maybe it's just 3. So I'm hoping, you know, by issue 6, I pretty sure I'll know whether I'm going to stick with it or not. I mean, it seems almost sacrilege to be a Top Cow fan and not read Witchblade. So maybe it's just setting up and it is going to get a little more edgy. That being said, if it doesn't resonate and it doesn't sell well, you and I both know that Top Cow is not one of those publishers that will just publish a book to publish it. If it's not selling, not making money, they'll just pull the plug, and maybe we won't see Witchblade again for a little while. But I don't know.
They'll change writers. That they're going to be doing medieval Spawn Witchblade, but we know that that doesn't necessarily have to be. That's not Sarah. Like you were telling me,
right?
You know, it's definitely not the last we're going to see of her. But you know, with Matt Hawkins teasing the darkness, when Witchblade 1 was going to come out, I mean, I was really excited to get that Artifact universe going again and make our chronology project that much longer. I'm crossing my fingers because we're both fans of this property.
Yeah, it'll definitely be an interesting conversation to have with Matt next time I see him, although it'll probably be off the record. Sorry, listeners, I won't be able to share the details of that with you. You know, sales numbers are not something that, if shared with me, I feel comfortable sharing with you. Sorry. So anything else you want to say about the classic Witchblade, Manny?
It's a nice nostalgic book to read, not only just by reading it, but just how far along we've come along in our quote unquote project.
Yep, definitely. So I know this is a little bit of a shorter episode, but sometimes that's okay. Please go back and listen to all previous episodes of our podcast. They can be found at thecomicsourceblog.com. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social media platforms, where you can keep up to date on all new episodes being released, as well as our convention coverage. Don't forget about our move to lrmonline.com. Should be starting next Monday, March 4th, that all new Comic Source content gets released at LRM Online. I think there's one technical detail that we need to work out just to make sure that happens. So we'll for sure keep you up to date. Meanwhile, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.